Thanks for joining me for 1 Corinthians 2. Let's get right into it. As always, I'll be reading in the Phillips translation. In the same way, my brothers, when I came to proclaim to you God's testimony, I did not come equipped with any brilliance of speech or intellect. And so how had he come? Well, by way of Holy Spirit obstacles in his attempt to speak in Western Asia, by way of a vision of a man of Macedonia crying out for help in the night, by way of a voyage across the Upper Aegean toward the garrison town of Philippi, where, after some varying degrees of success in speaking of Jesus, he and Silas are beaten, put in stocks, and while worshiping at midnight, cause a prison-shattering earthquake, by way of Thessalonica, where they are accused of turning the world upside down, by way of Berea, where things go well until the Thessalonians show up, and finally, by way of Athens, where Paul gets so clever with his philosopher poetry at the Areopagus that nearly everyone who hears from him, Stoic and Epicurean alike, leaves scratching their head. So that's right. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 1, is not some series of words in a scriptural vacuum. What I just told you, that is the human life context in which these words were composed, remembered, and thought of. So, we go on. You may as well know now that it was my secret determination to concentrate entirely on Jesus Christ himself and the fact of his death upon the cross. As a matter of fact, in myself, I was feeling far from strong. I was nervous and rather shaky. And I'll tell you, it's my opinion that his nervous shakiness and that newfound determination to teach only of Jesus and the crucifixion both spring out of how poorly things had just gone for Paul back in Athens. I hinted at it just a moment ago, but do you remember that scene? Paul has been sort of shunted off to Athens, partially because everywhere he goes follows riot and chaos. And from the minute he arrives in that ancient capital of democracy and philosophy, he begins chatting people up in the streets and the marketplaces all about Jesus of Nazareth. And for this activity, he receives two things: an unfortunate nickname, Cocksparrow, and an invitation to speak to the Council of Thinkers at the Areopagus. But once there, and again, this is why I think he arrives to Corinth nervous, shaky, and with these new speaking resolves. Once there, Paul begins trying to win over the Athenian thinkers and philosophers with all sorts of poetry, philosophy, cultural contextualization, and ends up, again in my opinion, mostly missing the boat. In fact, go back this week on your own and reread Acts 17 and tell me it's not one of Paul's strangest chapters in the book of Acts. He just seems like he's trying too hard, like he's in his own strength trying to do the gospel work himself. Well, here in Corinth, no more, we continue. What I said and preached had none of the attractiveness of the clever mind, but it was a demonstration of the power of the Spirit of God. Plainly, God's purpose was that your faith should rest not upon man's cleverness, but upon the power of God. Yes, indeed, I would add. And actually, yes, indeed, for all of us. Or I'll put it to you another way. Would you actually want to follow a belief that was entirely contingent upon the cleverness of man and only somewhat a demonstration of the power of God? Does that sound attractive to you? Because I'll tell you, the wisdom of man is only ever really as high as the height of the brain in which it's housed, i.e. not very high. The wisdom and power we're after here, the wisdom and power of this Jesus who was crucified, can only be revealed by the Spirit of God, who literally inhabits the heavenly places. We can only really get into this to the degree that we will be swept up, carried up. You know the logic of man? It will not suffice us here. We continue. We do, of course, speak wisdom among those who are spiritually mature, but it is not what is called wisdom by this world, nor by the powers that be, who soon will be only the powers that have been. The wisdom we speak of is that mysterious, secret wisdom of God, which he planned before the creation for our glory today. So just to make sure we actually know where this is all going, allow me to just reiterate all that. Before the creation of the heavens and the earth, God had a mysterious, secret wisdom already planned to show to the spiritually ready, which would draw them into his glory immediately. Now, this is a wisdom incomprehensible to the world, a world which, anyhow, is always in the business of passing away. Or in other words, we're about to be wading into some deep waters, like foreknowledge, timeless eternal wisdom, the revelation of heavenly glory to man. Are you ready for that? Because we'll continue now. None of the powers of this world have known this wisdom. None. Not one. If they had, they would never have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, things which eye saw not, and ear heard not, and which entered not into the heart of man, whatsoever things God prepared for them that love him. For God has, through the Spirit, let us share his secret. Okay, so the mysterious secret wisdom of God, unknown by any earthly power through all human history, cannot be ascertained or understood by the eye, ear, or soul of a man unless that man loves God. And then loving God, the Spirit comes to reveal his secret. I mean, isn't this getting a little exciting as it continues to build up? So let's now learn about that actual Spirit of revelation. We continue again. For nothing is hidden from the Spirit, not even the deep wisdom of God. For who could really understand a man's inmost thoughts except the spirit of the man himself? How much less could anyone understand the thoughts of God except the very Spirit of God? Now, this last week, I got to tell you, I read these words and then pretty much just stared out the window for an inordinate amount of time because it was really hitting me. The Holy Spirit is the Spirit of God. Like, I have a spirit, the spirit of Eugene T. Lunning II. You have a spirit, the spirit of, insert your name right there. And in just the same way, the Father and the Son share a mutual essence who is also this wild autonomous figure, the Holy Spirit. So doesn't this right now, like right this second, feel like the exact right moment for a grammatical conversation about the meaning of prepositional phrases that are linked by that word of? All right, well, I'm glad you brought it up because I think that sounds fun. Let's do that. When two words are linked by of, like we just read, Spirit of God, it can mean and function in a whole bunch of different ways. But important to our understanding of the power and glory of the Holy Spirit, again, the Spirit of God, I want you to listen to just a few. So those kind of phrases can indicate a point of reckoning, as in the Spirit who is therewith and comes from God. It can indicate an origin or derivation, the Spirit who has always been part of God since the endlessness and beginninglessness of eternity. It can indicate the cause, motive, or reason, the Spirit who is the inner animating force of God. It can indicate the location of an occurrence, the Spirit who is right now in, with, and making up the inner life of God. It can indicate the component material, parts, or elements, or the contents, like the Spirit who is the nature, inner life, essence of, and fills to all the fullness, God. It can indicate the whole that includes the part denoted by the preceding word, like the Spirit who is both inseparable from, and yet can be sent, received, and experienced in another's life simultaneously with God. It can indicate a relation to or an aboutness, like the Spirit who tells us everything about the wonders and glories of God. It can indicate a belonging or a possessive relationship, the Spirit who belongs to the Father and the Son, just as the Father and the Son belong to the Spirit of God. Lastly, it can indicate a characteristic or distinctive quality, like the Spirit who is spiritual because God is spirit, and the God who is godlike in his spirithood because the Spirit is and is actually God. So my friends, that was a lot. I would tell you, we could spend the rest of our lives wondering about, meditating on the Holy Spirit, and we would just never come close to beginning to scratch the surface of all that is happening in him. And isn't that actually such an exciting and really inviting thought? Ugh. Like, let's dive further, deeper into the Spirit of God. Let's dive into His mystery. In fact, buckle your seatbelt because we are going to continue. We're going to read on right now. And the marvelous thing is this, that we now receive not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit of God Himself. Just let that sink in for a moment. The Spirit of God Himself in us right now. So that we can actually understand something of God's generosity toward us. So not to be too redundant, but yes, to be a bit redundant. So the Spirit who is there with and comes from God, the Spirit who has always been part of God since the endlessness and beginninglessness of eternity, the Spirit who is the inner animating force of God, the Spirit who is right now in, with, and making up the inner life of God, the Spirit who is the nature, inner life, essence of, and fills to all the fullness God, the Spirit who is both inseparable from and yet can be sent, received, and experienced in another's life simultaneously with God, the Spirit who tells us everything about the wonders and glories of God, the Spirit who belongs to the Father and the Son just as the Father and the Son belong to the Spirit of God, the Spirit who is spiritual because God is spirit, and the God who is godlike in his spirithood because the Spirit is and is actually God, that God, that Holy Spirit is within us. We have received a direct transfusion of the very life of heaven into the midst of our soul, spirit, and personality. And I'm going to be a little bold here. You and I are having as much of a day-to-day experience of this Holy Spirit as the degree to which we will submit, listen, hear, and obey. You actually have a choice, the Spirit of the world or the Spirit of God. Which are you more interested in? We continue. It is these things that we talk about, not using the expressions of the human intellect, but those which the Holy Spirit teaches us, explaining spiritual things to those who are spiritual. And by the way, that's actually another challenging thought for us. What do we spend our lives talking about? How do we use the medium of interpersonal conversation? Because typically, I have found that most people talk about the things they're actually thinking about. So what are you thinking about, typically? We go on. But the unspiritual man simply cannot accept the matters which the Spirit deals with. They just don't make sense to him. For, after all, you must be spiritual to see spiritual things. The spiritual man, on the other hand, has an insight into the meaning of everything, though his insight may baffle the man of the world. This is because the former is sharing in God's wisdom. And by the way, now we're actually into another aspect of the power of the Holy Spirit in our lives. This is really one which Jesus himself addressed for us, taught us about in what we call the Last Discourse. So this is Jesus talking. I want you just to maybe even close your eyes and listen. This is from the night before the cross. Jesus said, "The Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I have said to you." So he's talking about an infinitude of knowledge, learning, memory, and remembrance brought by the Holy Spirit. Like, wow! Then he says, "When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me, for he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. Therefore, I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you." So the Holy Spirit is ready and willing, like right now, to lead us into everything that is true, everything. And he gets this truth, knowledge, and revelation from where? Directly from the Father and Son's lips. And so I would ask, what is the purpose of this truth, this knowledge, this revelation given to us by the Holy Spirit? Like, what are we to do with these limitless resources? Well, Jesus said, "When the Helper comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who proceeds from the Father, he will bear witness about me. And you also will bear witness because you have been with me from the beginning. So all of this, everything we've talked about in this podcast today, all of it is meant to result in a true firsthand testimony. I mean, talk about exciting. Okay, we continue. And who has known the mind of the Lord that he should instruct him? Incredible as it may sound, we who are spiritual have the very mind of Christ. Have the very mind of Christ. Ekumen, the word have there, it's in the present indicative active. We have, possess, have in keeping, we hold, dwell in, may acquire and enjoy the very mind of Christ. Friends, we have the very mind of Christ right now, today, right this second. So, as it pertains to the human experience and the human perception of the human experience, what are actually the three ways that every person on the planet experiences and perceives life? Mind, body, and spirit. And so, do you realize that for every single one of us who calls on the name Jesus, two-thirds, 66.67% of our human experience and perception are instantly raised into the heavenlies? We have the Spirit of God himself now. We have the very mind of Christ. To the degree that we desire to, we may now, like right now, experience the exact thoughts and inner life that Jesus himself experienced. How might that change your perception of what this week might hold? Thanks for listening.